Welcome, everyone. This is Warren Gereau, Senior Investment Analyst with Sightline Wealth Management. I'm pleased to welcome everyone to our manager interview series, where we interview portfolio managers and analysts of funds we believe may be of interest to our listeners. Today, our topic for discussion is flow-through shares. And to help us understand what flow-through shares are and how they work, we have Jason Mayer, Managing Partner of Sprott Inc., Senior Portfolio Manager of Sprott Asset Management. Jason joined Sprott Asset Management LP in November 2012. He has more than 20 years of investment industry experience focused on structuring flow-through investment vehicles and managing portfolios of growth-oriented resource equities. He has been the portfolio manager of Sprott and other third-party flow-through funds since 2013. Jason joined Sprott from Middlefield Capital Corporation, where he acted as a lead portfolio manager on a number of investment funds with a focus on resource equities. Jason holds a CFA and an MBA. Welcome, Jason. For our listeners,
thanks, Warren.
For our listeners unfamiliar with flow-through shares, what are flow-through shares and how do they work?
So flow-through shares are, in fact, just regular, ordinary, common shares. So we don't want to confuse people and think that they're a different type of share, or a different class of share. But the caveat is that when a company issues what's termed a flow-through share, they agree to expend the proceeds that they raise on resource-oriented exploration activities. These activities, as defined in the Tax Act, are tax-deductible. And the flow-through mechanism enables companies to flow through or renounce the deduction associated with those expenditures to the purchasers of the flow-through shares. So whenever someone wants to see the value, the market value of a flow-through share, they just need to look up where that particular company's stock is trading. And like I said, these are just regular, ordinary common shares, with the caveat being that the company spend the money on expiration and renounce or flow through those deductions to the purchasers of the share. So those that purchase the shares are getting exposure to that particular company, and their purchase is 100% deductible against all sources of income.
So most often when I'm looking at flow through, it looks like they're sort of structured in what's called a partnership, a limited partnership. So can you explain what a flow through limited partnership is?
Sure. Yeah. A number of years ago, the limited partnership was the vehicle that best suited the retail investor to actually participate in these types of offerings. So what we do is we put together a limited partnership. We go out and raise money in that limited partnership. That limited partnership then goes out and purchases shares that are issued on a flow-through basis from Canadian resource companies. Those companies then renounce or flow through the deductions associated with the purchases of those flow-through shares to the limited partnership. And the limited partnership then renounces or flow through those deductions to the purchasers of the limited partnership. So that at the end of the day, what the investor is getting is they're getting a pro rata portion in a diversified portfolio of Canadian resource stocks, and their investment is 100% tax deductible in the year of purchase.
So when you said earlier, Jason, that to find out what the value of your flow through shares are, you just look up the name of the company. Are those particular flow through shares like a, you know, let's say a ABC mining company, for example, and we have common shares listed already, or are flow through shares specific to the tax deductibility of the flow through of benefit of the costs associated with mining activities? Or is it, in other words, is there two classes of shares, a common share and a flow-through share? And if you have a flow-through share, how do you determine the value of it? What differentiates it on the market or in the marketplace when you're looking at the price?
Nothing differentiates you're describing as a flow-through share for a common share. The only thing that differentiates it is that when the company issues these shares, they're issuing the shares from Treasury. So they can issue ordinary common shares, or they can issue ordinary common shares on a flow-through basis. When they issue ordinary common shares on a flow-through basis, they agree to expend the proceeds that they raised through that issuance on expiration activities, and they agree to renounce or flow through those deductions to the purchasers of the shares. After that initial purchase, these shares are just regular, ordinary common shares, and their value is wherever the company's stock is trading at. There is no differentiation.
Okay. So why would you buy a portfolio of flow-through shares?
So as you can imagine, you know, the vast majority of these proceeds that are raised are expended on expiration activities. They're raised by micro and small cap companies. These companies have a certain risk profile, so that the best way to participate in this strategy is through a diversified approach. It's going to mitigate both the market risk with specific stocks, as well as the expiration risk associated with the company's specific expiration expenditures. So as anyone would diversify their portfolio of equity holdings, it's the same sort of concept, what you would like to do when you are purchasing a flow-through portfolio.
When a company issues the flow-through shares, are they issued at a premium?
Yes. So obviously the company is renouncing, i.e. they're giving up those deductions because, like I said, those expenditures are deductible. And since the company is giving up, they command a premium to wherever the market price of their shares are trading. Obviously, the benefit to the purchasers of the shares is that they get to write them off for tax purposes. So they do get issued at a premium. The premiums typically range between 10 and 20%, depending on the company's liquidity as well as their financial standing.
So are flow-through shares risky, or are they just in a risky sector?
Like I said, there's no differentiation between a share that's issued on a flow-through basis and an ordinary common share. So I wouldn't, there's no differentiation in that risk assessment. However, they are issued by resource companies, and, you know, by definition, you know, resource expiration is risky. So it is more of a risky sector as opposed to a risky share structure.
Okay. What about cap size? Are these typically, you know, very small cap companies that are issuing these, or are they large cap, mid cap?
Typically, it is micro to small cap. If you look at the weighted average of our limited partnership portfolios for the past couple of years, the weighted average market cap of those portfolios have ranged from approximately 2 to 300 million. So in the grand scheme of things, small to micro cap.
Okay. So a partnership typically, how long does a partnership last? Does it go on for a specific period of time? Is it when it matures, what happens?
So for example, the partnership that we currently have in the market, that partnership will have a termination date no later than February of 2025. The termination dates of the partnership are detailed in the prospectus. However, if the partnership performs well, we will endeavor to terminate the partnership at a much earlier date. In 2020, we in fact did that. It was a robust resource sector. Returns were quite positive, and we ended up providing liquidity to the limited partnership unit holders within 12 months. So the outside date is approximately 24 months and could be as soon as 12 months.
So what if I buy into the partnership? Is my only exit strategy on termination of the fund, or can I actually sell my shares, say, a year into a two-year contract or agreement?
So once you purchase the limited partnership, you are locked in. That's an important consideration. And the way the liquidity mechanism works is that once the limited partnership is terminated, the limited partnership units are exchanged for shares in a 9-point mutual fund. And that mutual fund is just like any other regular ordinary mutual fund. It provides clients and shareholders with daily redemption at NAV. So it is quite transparent. But while you are invested in the limited partnership, you do not have liquidity until the limited partnership terminates.
Oh, unless the partnership, as you said, you matured one earlier because it was a benefit because the resource sector had done very well. The shares in the partnership had done well. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. So okay. In that particular instance, we made the decision to terminate it earlier since it was a very positive experience for clients and there was no need to continue to hold the capital.
So what is the ACB, or the adjusted cost base, once the partnership terminates and it rolls into the units of a 9-point fund, mutual fund, what is the ACB of that mutual fund?
So the actual adjusted cost base at the termination of the limited partnership's life is going to vary depending on how that particular partnership was managed. Initially, the adjusted cost base for tax purposes is zero, and that's because the investor gets to write off their entire purchase against all sources of income. So initially, the adjusted cost base is zero. However, in the limited partnership's life, there will be some turnover, there will be some stock sold, and any disposition proceeds associated with any sales of the stocks held within the limited partnership are taxable at capital gains rates because they all have cost bases of zero. So over the life of the partnership, that cost base will grind up. However, it will still be quite de minimis in the scheme of the initial purchase price of the limited partnership. So I can't give you a specific answer just because the experience is going to differ from partnership to partnership.
So you said as the under the term of the partnership, you actually do have turnover of shares within the partnership?
Yeah, that's correct. So
are you buying shares?
No, typically in the second year of the partnership's life, those companies that we purchased on a flow-through basis, we will manage the portfolio actively to try to mitigate the risk, and in the case that the partnership does well, lock in gains. And as we do that, and as we do sell stocks and perhaps even buy other stocks, we are creating capital gains within the limited partnership, and that will grind the adjusted cost base higher.
Okay, typically, how many shares are involved in a partnership? How many different names are in the partnership?
Typically, I would say it will range from 40 to 60, depending on the opportunity set, depending on the time frame over which the partnership is invested.
And what do you typically look for when you're looking for shares to include in a partnership? What type of stocks? What's your criteria for investment?
So the way we try to do things is, you know, I have a bias towards having at least some fundamental value. So typically, given my investable universe, I'm looking for companies that, you know, have at least resources, ideally a time horizon to production and cash flow, and in some rare instances, they will be producing companies. That contrasts from some of my competitors' approach, which is to, you know, have a portfolio weighted to grassroots exploration-oriented type of companies. So we do have a bias to value to larger, more liquid names, and that is a way of, you know, the rationale behind that is it mitigates the risk to some extent.
So I obviously you mentioned mining sector. What about the oil sector? Is that also another sector you look at for these type of companies, or do they participate?
No, starting in 2018, oil and gas companies are no longer eligible to issue flow-through shares.
So it's just primarily mining sectors, the mining sector?
Correct. Yeah, it's predominantly the mining sector across all the commodities, whether it's precious metals, base metals, uranium, critical metals.
So how big will your universe be of the particular stocks you're looking for?
Oh, they would consist of hundreds of stocks. To narrow it down to 40 to 60 stocks that are actually purchased by the portfolio, you can see that there is, you know, a significant selection criteria. The investable universe consists of hundreds of stocks, and, you know, depending on the volume, anywhere from $500 million to $1 billion is issued on an annual basis.
I would assume they're all Canadian. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The mechanism in details that the companies that raise these proceeds must expend those proceeds on Canadian exploration activities. So the proceeds must be spent within Canada in a qualifying manner, per detailed in the Tax Act.
Okay. Why would investors buy flow-through shares? Or who? What type of investor would be looking to buy a flow-through share?
Well, ideally, it's a strategy that an investor will participate on an annual basis. The ideal candidate is an individual who's going to be consistently taxed at the highest marginal rate on a year, annual basis. And the reason I say that's the ideal candidate for this strategy is, you know, it is an investment in the resource sector, so it does have all the volatility associated in the resource sector. you look at the historical track record, the strategy does work. However, there is significant volatility from year to year, as you would expect in a resource strategy. So by participating on an annual basis, the investor gives themselves an opportunity to smooth out any negative years and continue to participate in years in which the returns are quite robust. But if you look over any sort of time horizon, the experience has been a very positive one on an after-tax basis for investors that have you know, participated in the limited partnership and the flow-through strategy.
So the investor's return comes from two components, I take it. One is the tax deductibility of the investment, and the other is the appreciation or depreciation of the underlying company shares. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So obviously, given the robust tax benefits that are generated by the structure, it reduces the break-even point. So it reduces the price at which, you know, the investor needs to sell their limited partnership units or the mutual fund shares that they will receive at the end of the life. So, for example, if a investor puts in $100, their downside protection is approximately 50%. You can take a look at the prospectus. It details all the numbers. So for every $100 that they deploy, that investment can decline to $50 before they are losing money on an after-tax basis. And that's really because of the robust tax benefits that are generated by the structure. So if it's a positive resource market and these stocks are going up, you can appreciate how the returns can quickly become supersized.
Okay. Sort of backtracking a bit, can a company issue multiple tranches of flow-through shares? In other words, you said for an investor, it's good if they invest on an annual basis to mitigate or reduce some of the volatility of return. What about the companies when they have exploratory activity and expenses? Do they issue just sort of once only, or do they issue multiple times through a period of time of development, or how does that work?
So, look, the majority of companies that issue flow-through shares tend to be what I call serial issuers of flow-through shares. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, they have projects in Canada. They typically don't have any revenue, so they're habitual consumers of capital. So over the years, you know, you sort of see the same companies continuing to continuing to advance projects. And that's, you know, like I said, is going to require multiple issues of flow-through shares. In an annual basis, you know, companies might issue once or twice per year, but over years, you'll see this companies issuing on multiple occasions as they continue to advance their Canadian assets, presuming they've had some success.
So from an investment point of view, though, if they're not making any revenue and they're serial issuers, what does that do to the stock price? Does that have an impact on it, or because they're actually expanding a resource, or
there? So ideally, you're going to find a company that is adding value by adding a resource and defining a resource and advancing a resource to production. So on the one hand, obviously, you have a company that's going to be diluting as they need to invest in the project. So, you know, our job as the portfolio manager is to find companies that are going to have a positive return on that investment, which is going to be reflected through resource addition, advancement of the asset, and ultimately and hopefully advancing that asset to production. And ideally, you know, that return is going to be greater than their cost of capital that is going to be reflected in how they're issuing shares.
Yeah. What about sort of other risks? I mean, obviously you have corporate risk or company risk and obviously sector risk. Are there any other risks, that sort of top line risks that you could think of?
Well, there's obviously the risks associated with the actual program and expending the money on the assets. So, you know, those are the main risks associated with the structure. Like you said, there's market risk, there's financial risk, and then there's expiration risk.
Okay. Now, I'm just kind of curious about it. How expensive is it to set up these partnerships? And for example, Sprott Asset Management, how many of these partnerships have you actually executed over the last, say, 4 or 5 years?
So I've been managing the limited partnerships at Sprott / NinePoint since 2013. And I'm just going to add them up here. So we have done 16 partnerships, and we're currently offering our 17th partnership. So, you know, typically we offer one partnership at the beginning of the year and one partnership towards the end of the year in the fourth quarter.
Okay. Is there any kind of economic environment that becomes more attractive? I mean, you know, mining stocks here for a while, they were really in the doldrums. And then all of a sudden, you know, it looks like we've had a bit of a commodity boom most recently. So does that make it, that must make it much more attractive, or investors must be asking for these types of companies when the market is sort of hot, or is that wrong?
Yeah, unfortunately, investors typically are most interested once things have had a real aggressive move. However, I think right now, given where we are in the cycle, specifically as it relates to gold bullion and gold equities, it could be an interesting time to invest these stocks, more so on the small and micro cap side, which is exactly the type of stocks that are purchased by the limited partnership. They had a very difficult 2022 as the Federal Reserve was raising rates. There was a lot of uncertainty. The sentiment was absolutely horrific. And especially as we went into tax loss selling season in late 2022, a lot of these stocks were absolutely pummeled. I think that creates a unique opportunity as to where we are at this current junction. And, you know, a lot of these stocks continue to be well below their levels that they even saw at the end of 2021, despite the fact that gold was up in Canadian dollar terms during 2022. And these companies need to raise money. So it could present a unique opportunity for those clients that have the foresight to actually make an investment now. But with that said, like I commented earlier, I really believe this clients are best served by consistently participating on an annual basis. That will ensure, you know, the strategy does work over time. There's no doubt about that. So to try to do a rifle shot approach, you know, isn't always the best idea. But with that said, I think this could be a unique opportunity given how badly beaten up the sector was until late 2020.
So you said that these structures typically have a termination date or a rollover date, what have you. How do you determine that the duration of a partnership?
That's just been the typical duration. Obviously, the partnership needs to at least span the tax year. So in this particular case, you know, for 2023, it needs to span into 2024. You know, the partnership is then afforded time to manage the liquidity to either, you know, generate those returns that we're hoping to generate. So historically, it's ideally been up to 2 years. We continue to do that. But like I said also earlier, that if the returns are robust, we would terminate the partnership early.
Okay. Okay. How many relationships or partnerships you have in, that you're managing right now that are near their end?
We just terminated two partnerships actually at the end of February. So those have just terminated. There's two existing partnerships that were launched last year that are still in existence and will be so until early 2024. And then we've launched our first partnership of 2023, which we're currently in the marketplace with.
Okay. What's been the return history? You said it varied. You said there's been a tough year last year. What's it been like overall?
It's been a very positive experience. So we've done, you know, since our first partnership since the first partnership that I launched at Sprott in 2013, the average, excluding the ones that just terminated, I apologize, I haven't built those in because we just got the numbers yesterday. But the average after-tax return for an Ontario investor taxed at the highest marginal rate has been 61%. So if investors participated in every partnership we have offered since 2013, they have had an after-tax return average of 61%. And that figure is audited. It takes into account all taxes saved as well as all taxes paid and or payable.
That's a pretty significant return, pretty healthy return. Now that's after tax, correct?
That is correct.
And I assume the tax rate you're talking about is the highest marginal tax rate?
Yeah, that figure I gave you is for an Ontario investor tax at the highest marginal rate. Obviously, the specific return figures would vary depending on the taxpayer's jurisdiction and that jurisdiction's marginal tax rate. But with that said, you know, it would certainly be quite positive no matter which province the purchaser resided in.
Yeah. I guess I was kind of wondering about the tax deduction. If I was to invest this year, what my tax deduction would be, but it really would be dependent on what my tax rate is and which province I'm in.
Well, yeah, right? the way to look at it, if you want to get a little granular, the deduction is, there's certainty on the deduction. I think you're alluding to what's the economic value of that deduction. So the purchase is 100% deductible against all sources of income. So the economic value of that deduction is going to be predicated on the marginal tax rate that the taxpayer is actually facing. In addition to the deduction, there's also tax credits. Tax credit will range from 15 to 30%. And the economic value of the tax credit is absolute in the year of investment because the tax credit drops down to the bottom line. So for example, on a $100 purchase, the taxpayer will be able to deduct that $100 from all sources of income. And in addition to that, they'll have a credit of between $15 to $30 that will be also credited to them in the year of investment.
Okay. Is there anything else that you think our listeners might be interested in or point you want to emphasize regarding these partnerships?
No, nothing specifically. I think we covered a lot of it off. If I was to have any sort of final thoughts, it would once again surround the fact that this is, you know, one of the only strategies that remains written into the Tax Act that can mitigate the tax burden of individuals. The track record is very strong. There's no doubt that those that have consistently participated have been handsomely rewarded. And given the current backdrop and what we just saw transpire in the resource space over the past quarter to 6 months, I think it could be an opportune time for someone to dip their toes into the strategy if they have not done so historically.
Okay. I know for the benefit of our listeners, we have a calculator and other resources that will be made available online for listeners to calculate their tax savings by investing in flow-through shares. I want to thank you, Jason, for taking the time today for our discussion. And if any of our listeners have any questions, please reach out to one of our Sightline advisors, and we'll be sure to get back to you with the answers. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.